traffic jam. Staring at the faces in a rearview mirror, looking at the promise of the promised land. One kid dreams of fame and fortune, one kid helps pay the rent.
Warrior, woke destroyer.
Only in America.
Randy Tobler.
Dreaming in red, white, and blue.
On News Talk STL.
Only in America, where we dream as big as.
Well, good morning. Welcome to another edition of The Tobler Show. Beautiful weekend this weekend. But before you get out and about, hope you'll spend some time with me and Jerome on the program this morning. We have stories international, national, and local. I don't even know where to start. There's so much. Iran attack is apparently imminent. That attack on one or another Israel facilities or installations, we don't know. But yesterday evening, it was within 48 hours. That puts it within 36 hours, if my clock is right. Inflation putting the brakes on the markets and Fed rate cut hopes. If you're looking to buy a house, want to pay off that credit card, don't think so quick that you might get a break the way things are looking after the inflation numbers out this week. Altogether now, thank you, Joe. The FISA renewal passing the House, a lot of consternation and controversy over that. And of course, I know Jerome is happy about this. He's a closet debt forgiving Biden debt forgiveness approval guy, but that's okay. You don't have to admit it, Jerome. That's fine. I'm kidding you there. If it's there, take advantage of it. But, you know, I think we all agree there's something that's rotten in Denmark about a lot of folks who either didn't take out loans in the first place, never went to college, paying or have paid them off, maybe help their kids along, paying theirs off too. I'll raise my hand there. I want reparations. I want loan debt forgiveness reparations somehow. It seems only right. But Joe is buying 270 some odd thousand people's votes, or trying to anyway, with that. And some strange things going on in the Missouri House as well. The budget was passed by the House last week. We don't know whether that's going to be really ever coming to fruition until the very last of the session. And some local stories, too. We got some interesting guests. Paula Scanlon from Independent Women's Forum is going to join us at 7 o'clock. Why? Well, you may have heard about the controversy last week before the women's finals in the NCAA. The South Carolina Gamecocks coach, who's a legendary coach, Dawn Staley, she's okay with trans, so-called trans females, that is, guys in dresses, you know, and mascara, playing on the girls' team. Hasn't reeled it back, but there are some advances and some protections for women's sports too. We'll talk with Paula about that. Virginia Cruda, that's at 7:45. And Will Scharf, candidate for Attorney General, will join us at 8:06. And then Becky Arps, but you may not have heard about an initiative that's working its way through the Missouri General Assembly. I think it made even advanced this through the Senate this last week. But Becky will join us. Of course, the much better half of our own Chris Arps, you know that. You see him every afternoon with Tim Jones on the Jones and Arps show. But she's been behind a move that I think is really important in terms of election integrity. And you have a chance to vote on that if, in fact, the General Assembly decides to put it on the ballot. Becky will join us at 8:25. So, big show today. Now, before we get started, there was a heartwarming, a heartwarming moment. I don't know if you saw it, but in contrast to the awkward Joe Biden meets everyday American family and everyday America, Americana that they've tried to roll out, Joe eating fried chicken with the African Americans somewhere, and then he was eating, he visited some other ethnic group, and Joe just, it's just not working out very well for him because he's so unauthentic and unrelatable. On the other hand, Donald Trump and his entourage arrive in a Chick-fil-A down in Fulton County there in Atlanta. And he is just having a great time relating to, talking with, just like he's one of the gang, asking about, he needs 30 milkshakes and a bunch of chicken for the folks gathered there. Quite an event. All of the people, all of whom, by the way, were African-American, behind the counter, just really seeming to enjoy the meeting with him and positively interacting with him. Then he got a big hug from Michaela Montgomery, a big hug, the kind that if Joe Biden tried to do it and had initiated it, would have been called Creepy Joe. On the other hand, America, most of us anyway, warmed up to the vision of Michaela just putting her head in Trump's chest in a big old hug. And turns out she is... she's the founder of a group called Conserve the Culture, and it has to do with the historically black colleges and universities. I guess there's four of them, who had some representatives in attendance there for that event. And in an interview the other day, this is what she said about that, because I think it really goes against the narrative that, hey, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. That's Joe's favorite line. Take a listen to Michaela Montgomery.
The general consensus, or social media, what have you, thinking that if President Trump were to show up to the HBCU campuses or walk around the AUC community, that like some angry mob would form or a riot would ensue and that he would not be welcome. And clearly the sentiment in that room the other day was the complete opposite. He was very welcome. People were excited to see him. People showed up in support of him.
Okay, so there you go. And I mean, I don't know if you caught that, but it was quite an event. It was just one of those moments where it's just, there's such a stark distinction between Donald Trump, and for all his flaws, maybe he is us. Maybe he's the guy that sits next to us up at the bar, and even though there's a lady next to him, he lets an expletive deleted fly. You know, that's the Donald Trump. And while I think we could expect better out of our leaders in terms of public behavior sometimes, the warm and relatable side of him is the side we saw there at that Chick-fil-A. Jerome, did you catch that little event the other day, that encounter that he had?
I caught one. I don't know if it was the same one or not, but I do remember that there was a young lady, African-American lady, that had this huge smile on her face and walked right up to him and was like, can I get a picture and a hug with you? And she looked at the camera and said, everybody, tell my mama I made it. And my heart sank. I was so happy for her.
Yeah, yeah. And he says, she said something to the effect of, I don't care what they say about you, we love you, something like that. You know, it was great. And so, I mean, maybe it was contrived. Maybe it was. But I'm telling you, the word I kept hearing around all the reporting and the analysis, and it's the one that struck me, was relatable. On the other hand, you look at Joe Biden, and he's just, at the same time that event was going on, he was holding a state dinner with the premier of Japan. Who were his guests? Jeff Bezos. Who was else there? Tim Cook. Everyone all dressed up in their regalia, probably eating the very $100 a pound Wagyu steak, from Japan. It's stark contrast. And isn't it funny how in a matter of a decade and a half or two, the Republicans have become the party of the people, while the Democrats have become, formerly they were the blue collar, the party of every man, every woman. Now they're the party of the elite. They're the party that are whining and dining and in turn get protection from and censorship in behalf of the big tech and, all of the big industries, which, by the way, when it comes to, I'm sure there were a lot of people there from the green energy as well, as that's a big, I put my hand in your pocket, take some money out and put it in my pocket and you do the same. That's what's going on there, just like the government unions and the Democrats as well. So the Democrats have become the party of the elite. Donald Trump, while he knows how to certainly live it up, and Mar-a-Lago is a spectacular venue in the old style way of spectacular America, the kind that I think Americans all used to aspire to. And because we honored those who built America, who built the libraries, who built the trains, who, changed our life. You know, nothing wrong with that. The problem is you can't forget about the guy who did the work getting there. And that's every man whose jobs have been sold to China, whose jobs have been sold to Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, the Philippines. By the way, I had a terrible encounter with another customer service. That's what they call it. Customer disservice agent from another insurance company the other day. I think she was from the Philippines. I don't know. I didn't ask her. I didn't have the heart to embarrass her. But, you know, we send jobs away. Where do those jobs go? They go to these foreign countries. Labor's cheap. That's what big government wants. That's why they like the open borders, because, I mean, that's what big industry wants. And that's why they want big government to open the border so they can get cheap labor here. If they can get away with it, they'll do it here. And under the name of, oh, look at the employment numbers. The employment numbers are so great. Yeah, you break it down. The employment numbers actually are represented by a lot of A, part-time jobs, and B, foreigners. So how good is that for helping support a family or start a family? Or if you're not ready to start a family, paying off your debt and getting something started in life with maybe a little bungalow you start investing in, and you climb the housing ladder, you know, one way or another. It has been disrespectful and a disservice to Americans. But I don't know. You look at the polls, it's still close. It's still close. I don't understand why. I think it's because one by one, he's buying out certain factions. We saw the student loan debt forgiveness fiasco again this week. A multi-billion dollar forgiveness plan benefiting, some 270,000 Americans. Earlier in the week, he's going to somehow either trim the interest for another swath of young people, maybe not so young people now. Seems to me if you sign a contract in these United States, I thought it was the government's job to enforce contracts through the judicial system. That's one thing the Constitution says. Not to forgive and to ignore those contracts. You signed a contract. And it's between you and whoever made you the loan to negotiate that. Oh, that's it, right. Maybe the government was backing those loans. So the negotiation in terms of government types is, give me a vote and I'll give you forgiveness. Wow, that's quite a negotiation. I wish I could do that when it comes to my mortgage holder on my property. I don't think it's going to work out very well that way on my home. Yesterday, Mike Johnson on the step. This is clip two, Jerome. Yesterday, Mike Johnson's on the stump down in Mar-a-Lago. It did sound a bit like a campaign speech, but it was really to endorse and to, I think, shoulder by shoulder, stand next to Donald Trump and get his endorsement for what they're calling the SAVE Act. What it is basically to maintain the integrity of the elections. I think all of us who looked at what happened in 2020, whether you thought there was overt fraud or whether you just thought that the seed bed was well prepared for it. And I don't know how 100% of people in a nursing home can vote when a good percentage of those people don't know what their name is, much less, you know, sign their name to anything. Those kind of reports came out because there was profligate open voting, essentially, and proxy voting on the part of people who could cast votes for others. I think that was clear. Mail-in votes with people that had died, that weren't on the rolls anymore, people registered in both places. I mean, the rules were changed. Joe Biden was elected maybe president. But in light of that historical fact, people want election integrity. People, that's all we want. Just, I don't care. If Joe Biden wins and it's a fair and square election, I'll live with it. I want to be able to trust it. Here's what Mike Johnson had to say in terms of what the House, he's going to introduce into the House.
I'm going to announce to you today, here standing alongside President Trump, that we will do everything within our power to ensure that we do have free and fair elections in this country. If we don't have that in a constitutional republic, we have nothing. It's the basis of who we are as a nation, and we owe that to the American people. And so what we're going to do is introduce legislation to require that every single person who registers to vote in a federal election must prove that they're an American citizen first.
Okay, there you go. I think it's clear that Mike Johnson continues to hold his head high despite being under siege from Marjorie Taylor Greene and others. He continues to, I think, do a fabulous job for a guy that has essentially a bad poker hand, and yet he's asked to win the World Poker Championship. Not going to happen. And if he can get any small win in terms of showing fidelity with the conservative cause, trying to maintain our elections, which, of course, he's right. It's like borders. If you don't have borders, you don't have country. If you don't have reliable elections full of integrity, forget about it. You might as well move to the Soviet Union and pay homage to Vladimir Putin or maybe Xi Jinping over in China, because Putin just had an election full of graft and corruption. He wins again. What a big surprise. That's the way we're heading if we don't put a stop to it. And hopefully we will do that. Hey, the number is 314-912-1019. This is the hour to call in. We'll have some call time earlier, but if you want to join in on the program, the goings-on of the day. The FISA bill was renewed by the House the other day. 80-some-odd Republicans defecting, but still enough to join the Democrats in securing that. We can talk about that. When we come back, I have a funny John Kennedy clip, too. He always provides us with a little humor on Saturdays. I'm Randy. There's Jerome. We'll be back on The Tobler Show. Stay there.
Randy Tobler, truth warrior, woke destroyer, on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. This is News Talk STL.
Hi, we're back here on the Tobler Show. Thanks for being with us this and every Saturday morning. It's good to be with you. 6 to 9, of course, we're on every Saturday. And if you can't catch us live and, you know, with the things heating up, the sports season's up. I know the sporting seasons are up. Bass will be spawning in the ponds pretty soon along with other fish. I'm wondering if that's going to be the case in my lake here at the Liberty Lair. We saw the eagle soaring over the lake. We call it Lake Liberty here at the Liberty Lair. And the eagle was soaring over that as I drove up yesterday. It's quite a sight. We're very blessed to have a pair of nesting eagles here on the property. And it continues to remind us and give us hope that if we continue to hold those values and virtues that got us to this dance close to our hearts and continue dancing with those values and virtues, hopefully things will get turned around. I worry a lot about the balkanization of our politics and our political class and what they do in their governance. It occurs to me that even this senior citizen property tax freeze that, you know, the General Assembly passed last year, and now various jurisdictions are voting it in because it was not a statewide mandate, but basically said, if you're eligible for Social Security, I think it's as of next January 1, should it be voted in by your county or your municipality? Some are, very few councils or commissions are voting it. That's a hot potato. It's sort of like student loan forgiveness. Why should one class of citizens have their property taxes frozen while the others continue to see escalations in it? I mean, look, I just turned of age last year where I could benefit from that. And I got to thinking about it. You know, it just doesn't seem right. Why should Jerome's property taxes continue to go up? Why should your property taxes, if you're not yet of Social Security eligibility age, continue to go up when mine are frozen? And it's irrespective of means testing, whether or not you're, you know, living off of Social Security or whether you're not. It doesn't matter. It is another attempt for, I think, politicians, and maybe it's a good faith attempt. I mean, a lot of seniors do struggle trying to make it. But I think it's another pandering to one group of people that maybe we need to rethink that. We're going to pander to the students here with some student loan forgiveness. We're going to pander to industry here with a little crony capitalism, how about pandering to the insurance companies in the name of you can keep your doctor, you can keep your insurance plan. They get in bed with the insurance companies. They say, hey, we're going to mandate that someone needs to buy your product in return for making it mandatory that you provide that product, and wink, wink, we'll subsidize it too. Sounds like a good gig if you can get it, right, Jerome? I'd love to be able to build a mousetrap that the government said everyone had to buy that mousetrap. Sounding pretty good to me.
Oh, yeah. If I could make a mandate where you could only listen to the Dr. Randy Tobler Show, we would be cooking with fire then, wouldn't we?
That's it. We need to have a mandate that everyone must turn on their radios at 6 a.m. every Saturday, listen to the Tobler Show. Could you imagine how many sponsors we'd have? We wouldn't have time for content. I mean, everyone would be sponsoring the show because they know it would be a mandate, right? We'd have, how many people would listen to it? What are there? People of listening age? 200 million, maybe? I mean, the kids, they're going to watch TikTok videos of people dancing crazy, whatever. But, you know, for people that want serious conversation about the things that make a difference in our life, I think it'd be great. But you see how it sounds absurd, but it's arguing the absurd to make the point. The government has no business in getting in the way of commerce, in the way of social engineering. I've caught a lot of heck because I think the government is trying to buy the affection of, I'm going to say it, a lot of middle class and other class women and, yes, men who want childcare subsidies. Really, that's interesting. I think we paid for our childcare, or our grandparents helped us when my wife was working part time, or we did something else. I worked an extra job if we had to go to the childcare, but when I was in medical school or whatever, you know, I found a way to, we paid for it. I didn't ask for senior citizens to pay for childcare. I didn't ask for people without kids to pay for childcare, but now we're going to buy the votes of people who, you know, want childcare. Boy, that catches me a lot of health among those people that want childcare for their kids. But think about it. I mean, if you look at it objectively, you take yourself out of it, because even though you may like the childcare subsidy, you may like a child tax credit, is it right for the government to socially engineer with policy? Or is it right for the government to provide us protection from foreigners, secure borders, a justice system that honors contracts and catches bad guys and puts them in jail or executes them if they hurt other people badly enough? And then that's where we need to, it's very simple. Jerome, I think if you and I ran, I don't know, we might get like two votes. What do you think with our philosophy of governance? Like two, three?
I'd vote for us.
I don't know. You'd vote for us. All right. Let's talk to Gene, the dancing machine. How you doing, Gene? What's going on, brother?
Hey, good morning. As far as buying the votes, it's like, oh my God, oh no. That would be bad news. That's actually what I'm very fearful of coming up with this election. The polls are, I don't know, I can't put any stock in them. And some of them maybe, but statistically, you kind of always wonder. But I think.
You don't think people are, do you think that people are, especially on the right, are just not telling the pollsters the truth, which seems to be the case in 2016 anyway? People just didn't want the pollsters to know what they were going to, how they were going to vote. And then they came out especially in the swing states, they came out for Trump.
That could very well be. I just am fearful again that it's going to be, I forget if it was Stalin or Marx that said it's not the people that vote, it's the people that count the votes, or something to that effect. But and realistically, it doesn't seem like we've made a whole lot of progress on election laws and the way we vote to try to actually secure the vote. I'm a paper ballot, send it through the old Scantron thing and hang on to all that paper and watch where it's going, keep a good chain of custody on it.
How do you feel about the increasing propensity of legislators at all levels to buy certain demographic votes with handouts, with programs, with, the government workers, of course, they get favored by government types who can favor them. And in turn, their coffers get padded, special interest groups all over the place. And then there's a little handout to this special interest group, that special interest group. I just don't know that it's ever going to return to a pre-income tax environment where, if an army needed to be raised, they raised a tax. If a road needed to be built, they raised a tax, and then it went away. And none of this buying one another's favors with a perpetual piggy bank that we, the taxpayers, give them to then buy our affections one by another.
Well, I agree. I mean, all of us somewhere along the line benefit from either a tax law, which is a legal thing, you know, if you've got deductions and everything, my God, take them. We pay enough as it is anyway. If they're providing a legal mechanism to take a deduction, your mortgage interest rate, let's say for insurance, interest instance. God, I can't talk this morning. I need another coffee. But as far as this just out and out pandering, and it's just so over the top with Biden again, after getting slapped down, what, three times now by the Supreme Court, telling him, Joe, you can't do this. And on top of that, it's just absolutely so disgusting that the Democrats are just so strong in lockstep. It's like, okay, we're fine with doing something illegal like that and doing it. We're going to do this for the power, et cetera, et cetera. And all of those people up there are just so corrupt with the power and the money. And you get to a point where I'm really concerned about the viability of this country. And I think if it gets stolen away, if Trump doesn't get in office, Trump's got his foibles, et cetera. But I believe that the guy really loves this country and has good intention for it. Best you can expect out of a politician. But
isn't it time though that we call out, Gene, both parties, right? Both parties are guilty of this. They've gotten us here.
Yes.
And we really need to call out the Republicans too, who, remember when earmarks and the pork spending went away under, who was that? I think it was pre-Biden. Pre-Paul Ryan. But for a while, when the Republicans had both chambers, there was no, they did away with the pork and the earmarks, but then those have returned. And I mean, in this recent budget bill, you know, we highlighted it. You heard about things. We're sure. Highlighting the renovation of some, we talked about some sex fetish place up in for LGBTQs and S&M place up in Pennsylvania. I mean, really? Are you kidding me? And it's just got to stop. You know, I don't care if someone wants to have their own private S&M place. That's fine. I mean, I think it's bizarre and it's a shame for them, but we live in a free country, but I just don't want to support that. I have no business supporting. I don't, you know, and I don't want them to support, a playground in my, you know, neighborhood either. That's my neighborhood's job to do. It's become, like you said, so corrupt. What kind of bacon can politicians bring home and put their name on the corner of a bridge or on some new library or something? That's for local and state folks to do, not the feds.
I agree, and I hope there's a little bit of a tide beginning to turn, starting with some of the things the individual states are doing to try to fight off the invasion that's pouring over the border. Maybe the states will start to wake up, and it's like, hey, you know, maybe we need to get back to the Constitution and bring back our power, superseding the federal government that we subjugated to them years ago. It's like, hey, right. Yeah, okay, you can do this, but give me a kickback and I'll take 10% back while you're taking 90% out of my coffers.
Absolutely. Hey, you got it right. Well, thanks for calling, man. I appreciate it, Gene. Really do. You have a great weekend.
Hey, you bet.
God bless you. That's too. A good jumping off point to have some fun with John Kennedy, Senator John Kennedy, of course, in the they're slow walking this Mayorkas impeachment initiative. I don't understand why those articles of impeachment haven't been walked across from one side of the Capitol, the House, where it was passed, a couple of weeks ago now. Walk them across to the Senate. Chuck Schumer. Come on, have a trial. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of, Chucky baby? There's only one other time that there's been a trial didn't occur. And those are under very special circumstances because that person resigned before they could be convicted in a Senate trial among all the dozens and dozens of impeachments that have occurred. Well, Senator John Kennedy the other day had something to say about those folks that don't want to see a trial happen. Listen to this.
We're not talking here about some snow bro who lives off chicken McNuggets and weed and happens to have an opinion. The United States House of Representatives, elected by all of the American people, spent months investigating our border policy and Secretary Mayorkas' role in it. And then they thoughtfully crafted and they passed with a majority vote two articles of impeachment. And now my Senate Democratic colleagues want to toss them out in the trash like a week old tuna salad sandwich.
There is no greater orator in this country than Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana. And, you know, he's an attorney. I don't know about you, but if I was, if I was fighting for my life on, you know, some criminal conviction or, you know, Donald Trump on the stand for, you know, this or that infraction in the civil, I would want John Kennedy to be my counsel in a jury trial. That guy could win the hearts of the most adverse jury ever. I mean, he is just, I don't think I've ever seen anyone with a better way of words. Have you, Jerome? He is just hilarious.
No, I've been getting more into him lately and Just there's something about his cadence, the way he says stuff with such conviction, his witty comments. Mm-hmm. Back. The only thing I would say, though, when he was talking about the chicken nuggets and being stoned, he didn't have to call out Tony Colombo like that, you know? Sorry, Tony.
Yeah, I know. I cut into that. I didn't want to embarrass Tony, you know. I mean, I just wanted to. We cut in the middle of that quote. He was talking about Tony there, chicken McNuggets and smoking weed and all.
But I did see some stuff recently where it looks like in a lot of areas, RFK is actually coming out ahead in polls, ahead of Biden and Trump. So do you think that there's anything there for him as a potential presidential candidate this cycle, or do you think he's going to have to put this one out?
I have not seen those polls, but I think with his choice of vice president, I think that I would gladly take whatever he might little swath of vote he might take from Donald Trump. I'll take that for the big swath he's going to take from Biden, because clearly he chose a VP pick who's squarely progressive. I think if he'd had someone more in the middle, actually his overall grab, I think, would be bigger. And I think that part that he got from Trump would be bigger, but I don't know. Where have you seen him with a substantial lead? Cause I see him, or a substantial vote. I only see him in the upper single digits, maybe lower, you know, teens in some of the bigger polls I've seen.
Oh, I mean, the three way coming from his social media page. So obviously it could be quite biased, but it's not like an entire state. I should have corrected myself better. It's specific areas across the nation where, and it's not a massive lead, but he's coming out a few points here, a few points there, depending on the city or the county. And so I've started to give him a little bit more credence with that. I thought he was mainly there as the alternate pick that, you know, Nikki Haley wanted to be. But it seems like he's actually taking this very seriously now, and he's pushing to get on all the ballots in all 50 states. So I didn't know if you'd been following him, if you had any insight into that.
No, I have. Well, I've been watching him because there are parts about him that I am endeared to. And that is that while I disagree, and there's no doubt about it, I mean, he is a progressive in Democrat clothing. Let's not be deceived about that. Just because he was against the COVID-19 vax and its mandate and on, he also has had some fairly wacky thoughts about vaccines in general in the past. He's now trying to walk that back. But I mean, there's people may disagree, but you can't reinvent the truth. Vaccines, along with water sanitation, and antibiotics have been among the leading advances that have kept the world advancing in lifespan over the past couple of centuries. So there's no doubt about that. And to dismiss vaccines in general, he bought the big MMR hoax causing autism, which is just not true. A doctor in England spawned that in the late 90s. He was dishonored. He lost his license. His studies were bad. They were discredited by the entire medical community. So at any rate, he's an interesting guy, and I'll take whatever he'll take from Joe Biden if it means that Donald Trump ends up in the Oval Office. And as important, Donald Trump can end up in the Oval Office, but if he doesn't have a willing Congress, he can't get much done. And that's going to be a problem. Even when he had a nominally sympathetic Congress, you saw what happened when John McCain gave him the thumbs down when there was a chance to do away with Obamacare, the biggest travesty that's ever been foisted on the American body politic. I can't tell you how many people are so unhappy with their health care. Their day-to-day health care. If you need specialty care or you have an emergency, and eventually if you can get to your primary care doctor, you're going to get pretty good care if you can get a few minutes with them. But because of all of the regulations, the red tape, the documentation, the compliance, not only have the costs of health care gone sky high, but the time with your doctor, which is so precious, has gone away. It's evaporated thanks to Obamacare. Well, when we come back, let's talk about a local issue, and we do need to highlight, I think, what's been going on in America's psychology, and maybe just bring to light that there are some options. I've had two people in the last 2 weeks that could have used a service that we're going to highlight when we come back here on The Tolbert Show. Lots coming up straight ahead. Stay there, please.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. Talk lines are open now at 314-912-1019.
Welcome back to the program. Coming up next hour, if you are interested in preserving women's sports for women, I think you'll want to tune in to our interview with Paula Scanlon from Independent Women's Forum, talking about Coach Staley from the South Carolina Gamecock, ladies Gamecock basketball team. Her comments before the match last week, they beat Iowa fair and square, but it was interesting to hear her comments when she was, I guess, shamed into endorsing the narrative that many in the woke community have done, hasn't walked it back. On the other hand, organizations, both national and international, have been, I think, making some sensible changes. We've actually seen recently a report come out in the UK chastising the way the United Kingdom jumped on board the gender transition for troubled kids with gender dysphoria bandwagon. They've now reversed that. Totally reversed it. So we'll talk with her then. Virginia Cruda at 7:45, and later on, Becky Arps about an initiative that hopefully it'll see on the ballot, a constitutional amendment to help maintain election integrity, along with Will Scharf in the 8 o'clock hour both. So it's a big, big program today. You know, we're seeing rising rates of depression among really all age groups, but especially among young people. If you look at depression just in the past decade among the youngest, the teenage group, 12 to 17, it's amazing how it's gone to almost now approaching 25% in the latest polls. Among people 26 to, the prevalence of past year depression among all Americans went up from 7.3% in 2015 to 8.6% in 2019. In 2020, it's almost 10%. And you just see this happening. When you look at the age stratification, 2015 to 2019, this is in 12 to 17 year olds, it went from 12.7% to, in 2020, 17%. So you're seeing dramatic increases, and it's really across the board. That coupled with an article that I caught in the Wall Street Journal about anger and about toxic outrage. I mean, when Taylor Swift didn't acknowledge Celine Dion, who presented her with the Artist of the Year or Album of the Year, I mean, she was just pummeled on social media. I mean, how many of us, I'll raise my hand here, it happens on the show, it happens not infrequently. You do a public speaking event, you forget to acknowledge some, you know, celebrity, some important person in the audience, some not so important person, but someone who needs to be recognized that maybe planned the event. And afterwards, you kick yourself and say, duh, what was I doing? You know, it's just that I think that this toxic outrage, the bitter vitriol that we express towards one another, probably is a symptom of, I think, a countrywide depression. People know there's something wrong in these United States of America. And it's one thing to express as outrage and get on your social media and anonymously or not so anonymously, but certainly at more than arm's length distance. You don't have to look that person in the face, and you can do snarky tweets and snarky posts on your Facebook. But it's a symptom of depression. I mean, there's no doubt. People that are depressed or irritable, they tend to lash out. They have a short fuse. And sometimes that's directed against themselves. And that's when we see the rates of suicide and suicide attempts that have gone up. Men tend to be more successful with suicide than women. Women tend to have more suicide attempts that are really cries for help, not real attempts. Men tend to complete the act. We see that among young men, among adolescents, and especially among, and we see it among older men too, 50 and above. Last week, we talked about the difficulty, and Jerome, you talked about it very personally, about the difficulty that young men your age with quite a nice resume are having a heck of a time even getting a look for a job. Can't even get an interview because the color of your skin, your gender, you know, those kind of issues. But we should bring to light that there, if you have any problems with that, and I know this is something that Jerome, is near and dear to your heart to get out there. There are resources before you do the unthinkable, right?
Yeah, and I appreciate you bringing that up because this is something that I've experienced a lot in my life with people that are no longer here that should be here, and people that have just given up to the hopelessness and they're basically just existing to exist. So I came across this article the other night, and so Missouri has what's called a 988 number, and it's a suicide and crisis hotline. So even if you're not suicidal, but you are overwhelmed or something's going on that's making you need somebody there, they're there for you. And so in the first year, they've had about 2,000 calls. I couldn't really find the success rate of that, but I'm assuming if they're listing that, then those were going well. And I would like to thank them for having this as a thing. This is their first anniversary. So it was just very important for me. In case anybody out there knows somebody or they personally are going through something, I'm always the depressing one on the show. But I want to thank them for all the work they do, because it does mean a lot to people like me and to the people that go through this that don't feel like they have anyone else to turn to have volunteers. It's all volunteer driven. To be out there to lend you a shoulder if you need one. And so I just want to say thank you to the Missouri Crisis Hotline. It's 988 if you ever need it.
Right. It's important. And, you know, I mean, I think we should talk, too, about our veterans. There's a great organization here in St. Louis called Heroes Care. I've been involved in, with some events we've done in the past at their facility. They take care of veterans that are having psychological problems once they return from deployment. And we know that, when you've seen the carnage that many have seen, you never recover from that. Some end up going down a very, very, very dark hole. And I know that they have volunteer psychologists, counselors that help. And they also help take care of the families, too, because that's another, I think, stressor that we're going to see is financial stresses. I mean, people are still spending like it's yesterday. I don't understand it. The economists can't explain it unless it's pent up demand. But I'm concerned that people that continue to load up their credit cards and more credit cards and more credit cards. And then when the collection man cometh, I think that we know it strains relationships. We know it strains people's hope and optimism. Financial woes are among the leading causes of depression and frankly, interrelationship violence and others. So it's good to get it out there. It's in the 988 is the number, and that's the Missouri Crisis Hotline. So, yeah, with that, do we have time? I don't know if we have time to do that. Let's do this. Let's play clip 10. This is an O.J. Simpson juror. Jerry, I don't want to spend too much time on OJ. The guy had everything, star of football, Hall of Fame, stage, screen, well, not stage, but screen, commercials. When you rented a car, if it was at Hertz, even if it wasn't at Hertz, you thought about OJ in the 90s or in the 80s until the 90s rolled along. And then there was that horrific scene with his wife and Dan Goldman being murdered brutally. And then, of course, the trial ensued. That was in the wake of the Rodney King beating out in L.A. and the inflamed times that erupted there, the riots. Here's what a contemporary juror who was a juror at the time and now a contemporary interview, what she had to say about the sentiments of the jury then and really why it all came down the way it did with an acquittal in that criminal trial.
Do you think that there are members of the jury that voted to acquit OJ because of Rodney King?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
How many of you think felt that way?
Oh, probably 90% of us.
90%? Did you feel that way?
Yes.
That was payback.
Uh-huh.
That was judicial reparations in play there. We're going to step aside, come back and talk with Paula Scanlon about protecting women's sports. Stay tuned for more on The Tobler Show.